Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. As many of you know, we have been interviewing every Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Andy Williams Jr., presidential campaign for the 2024 election. Andy Williams Jr. will not be with us today, but we do have on with us his vice presidential candidate, Rita Williams. Not to mistake them for husband and wife, they're not. They just happen to have the same last name. But before I introduce Rita to everyone, I'd like to mention something. We have a problem in the country sometimes with everything going on. We tend to forget. We tend to do things that we would not normally do if we are on target with what's going on around us. We always have to be aware of our environment, but we also have to be aware of our mental health. And sometimes we get so caught up, we have so many things going on, we get frustrated, we get upset, many people get angry, and these are some of the issues that leads to conflict in the country and around the world. I'm the type of person, I don't like to text, I don't like to chat, I don't like to do emails. I believe in people verbally speaking on the phone or in person. I believe in people coming together, not by, we have too much media, we have too many Facebook, social media, texting and emailing. Yesterday, Andy Williams Jr. informed me that his vice presidential campaign would be coming on. And you might know when a radio show starts, you start getting all of these calls. I'm going to put everyone on hold just for a second. Another former guest. What I was saying, though, basically, is that Andy Williams Jr. had introduced me to Rita Williams, and I had sent her a message asking for her email address, which she sent. Caught up in all the things that I was doing, I never looked at the email or the text, and I assumed that she hadn't responded. So as many of us do in society today, we automatically get frustrated and upset, only to find out later that we're making fools of ourselves. Because if we actually take the time and slow down and look at the material that is being sent to us, we will see that sometimes we're wrong. So I want to formally apologize to Ms. Rita Williams for getting upset with the fact that I did not receive her email, which was right in my message, but I didn't look. So Ms. Williams, I want to thank you for your patience, and I want to apologize for the mistake that I made, and I will now start being more aware when people send me things. But I want to introduce again Rita Williams, vice presidential candidate that is running in the race with Andy Williams Jr. for the presidential campaign. Ms. Williams, vice presidential campaign, I want to thank you. I want to say I'm honored to have you on the show, and if you can let the audience know a little bit about yourself, and maybe you can talk further about what your plans are and how things are coming.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Leona. Like, I absolutely had no idea you were frustrated with me. You were the epitome of class and poise. So, thank you for being wonderful and professional. Like, I don't want you to sweat that at all. You are lovely. Don't worry. So a little bit about me. I am a criminal justice professional. I have my master's in criminal justice from Purdue University Global. I finished that in February of 2022. I also am a certified mitigation specialist, and I am on my way to being a paralegal, and I'm getting ready to take the board exam for that in terms of, like, official certification. I am a firm believer in criminal justice reform and, abolition as it is with the prison system today. So I am a little bit mouthy, but I try really hard to be nice in whatever I do. I try really hard to stand up for those who don't have a voice. And I am so, so proud to be Andy's running mate.
I want to thank you for that, too. I am a prisoner advocate. I've been advocating for the incarcerated men, women, and youth since 2003. But I was doing individual and independent before that. But the reason I want to thank you is because you're coming in at a right time, because I understand now the Department of Justice is also looking at working on abolishing the death penalty, which makes no sense anyway. Because if people are going to, because they're with government, are going to execute people for executing people, it doesn't even make sense. And secondly, they're talking about trying to reduce the sentencing guidelines, because we do have mass incarceration. And I interviewed today Dave Van Beem and Marika Schoen-Gils from the Netherlands, who recently wrote a book called The Unknown. Dave is a former incarcerated individual who came out and turned his life around and wrote a book. And Marika is a police officer, a commissioner of police officer, former police officer. So it's been awesome. And Franz Dell, also from Amsterdam, a former 27-year warden, has also been coming on the show every Wednesday. However, he and his wife are on vacation now for the next week or two. So when you talk about criminal justice reform, that is very much needed in this country, because they talk about the comparison between mass incarceration in the U.S. compared to their countries, which is not mass incarceration, successful in their recidivism rate. So that is one issue that I'm so pleased to know that you're going to be working on as well. I wanted to ask you if you can just tell us some of the things that you would be working on with the presidential campaign if elected. What would some of the issues in this country right now that are a problem, what would some of these issues be the first priority in your campaign?
You know, Leona, I am so glad that you asked me that, because I have a top three that are near and dear to my heart that I feel are contributing to basically creating the United States of incarceration, as I like to call it now. First and foremost is the school-to-prison pipeline. We are failing children hand over fist in this country. I am the mother of neurodivergent kids. Both of my children have ADHD. I myself have ADHD. My ADHD was not caught until I was an adult. And the school systems are not equipped to handle children that are different, that are gifted, that they think differently, they think faster. And I feel like that's a big piece of what creates this school-to-prison pipeline, is kids don't fit the mold of this traditional and antiquated school system. And so immediately we turn kids to other. And when we turn kids to other, we are creating them to be outcasts. And they are more comfortable with saying things, well, I guess, you know, it doesn't really matter what I do because I'm already other. And that is a very, very big, campaign platform to me that I want to change, of no, it shouldn't be like that, because we shouldn't be setting kids up from the get-go, from their earliest moments, to eventually end up in prison. We need to meet them where they're at. We need to understand them. We need to provide adequate nutrition and, you know, proper testing. And we need to start measuring the right things within schools. We need to measure not test scores, but are kids actually comprehending? We need to measure teacher effectiveness. We need to look at all of these things that are actually, you know, the things that matter, instead of what was this kid's test score? Because those things are what, you know, those things are what create that school-to-prison pipeline. And those exactly. are all things that if we start taking them into account, it's going to get better.
You're so right about that. Exactly. These are problems in this country. You know, ADHD, but also ADD, attention deficit disorders, attention hyperdeficit disorder. One of the things is in this prison, as you just mentioned, in this country, is there's adults that have those same disabilities, and they don't even know it. But these type of disabilities does not mean there's something wrong with the children. It means that they're very intelligent. Most disabled children are very intelligent. However, like you say, if they don't get the proper treatment as children, a lot of them can end up in prison. So this
absolutely.
ADHD, I'd like to have you speak more on. I'd like to have you speak more on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It also leads to, you know, self-esteem issues of a kid feeling like they're not good enough. Of, hey, my teacher says there's something wrong with me, so there must be something wrong with me, and it's absolutely not the case. What I have found through my research and my advocacy is we're not really meeting people where they are. We're expecting everyone to fit into a perfectly controlled box, and that's just not possible. That's not the human condition. We're all so very different, and we need to embrace that and leverage it and use those strengths to bring different things to the table. Because very easily, Leona, I could have been a statistic. I could have been, you know, according to my criminology course when I was going through Purdue, I could have been somebody who was on drugs, who, ended up with multiple, you know, baby daddies, for lack of a better term. I should have been set up to fail, considering that I was a girl with ADHD, that I was a girl who had, you know, by the way my brain is formed, impulsivity issues. And I'm so lucky that it just turned the other way. But there's so many people and so many kids out there that aren't as lucky. And that's what we need to focus on, is how do we change that narrative? How do we get parents and teachers and communities to invest in these kids and do better?
I want to say you and Andy seem to be talking about some of the main issues that go on in this country. Right now, our divided government, politicians, Democrats and Republicans, they can't seem to get it together. But when they do, they focus on all the issues that really don't make sense. Right now, everything is going over to other countries rather than focusing on the main issues in this country. We have problems with the economy. We have problems in the schools with the mass shootings. We have problems with a lot of these teachers. Everyone wants to get their raises. But when I watch these people on strike, I'm looking at some of these teachers, and they look like they're off the street. You know, and I don't see role models in this country anymore in anything. But you and Andy are talking about some really very important issues, because if we want a safe society, then we have to have a safe upbringing. And a lot of children are not getting that upbringing the way they should, because, as you say, the schools are failing them. You know, the doctors and hospitals, these pharmacists, they're over medicating, and people are getting addicted to drugs and alcohol. And these are some of the issues also that kind of fall into some of these areas of need to improve this country and the communities as well.
I absolutely agree. And I think you mentioned something that's really kind of, I would say, a pandemic in our country. We either over-medicate or we under-medicate. Like ADHD
yes.
brains, we respond very well to stimulants, but not everybody is an ADHD brain. So, you know, people that are receiving methamphetamines or are abusing methamphetamines, you know, they kind of ruin it for the rest of us who actually need that for our brains to properly do what they need to do. But then there's also people who they're being failed by the system and they turn to opioids. You know, there's a lot of either over or under medicating, and the system, and this is, you know, probably perhaps tongue in cheek that I'm going to say this, but the system is purposefully covering up that these things are happening, because it's moral failing on their part that these things are happening. And we need to start addressing that as Americans. If we want to save our country, if we want to, you know, keep something, you know, that, you know, or have something to keep, have something that remains. So there's a lot of things that we need to come together as a group and say, this isn't a left thing, this isn't a right thing, this is a human rights thing. And we need to meet in the middle and be there for each other. We just need to show up in the best way possible.
Exactly. Someone mentioned earlier today to me, and I never thought about that, but they said all of these things that are going on right now, as all of these things going on worldwide, especially with our government, our president going over to all these countries, they said that all of these things that we need to be focusing on in this country are being redirected to mm-hmm. other countries so that the real issues are not being addressed. And you just mentioned something similar to that that made me think about that statement. There's a lot of things.
I wholeheartedly agree. Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. What's happening is we are diverting attention from the weaknesses in our own country. Like, we are not looking out for our own people whatsoever. Like, if you consider even, let's say, a country like Japan, Japan is not as involved in, you know, world conflict as America is, obviously. They don't have as big of an issue with homelessness, with mental illness, as we do. And a big part of that is because we don't, you know, they aren't sending people into conflict. They are taking care of their own.
Exactly.
They also have tremendous, you know, programs that if somebody falls on hard times, there are social safety nets to catch them. So we don't have, or they don't have, you know, people living under the bridge. But another big, big piece of that is, you know, we send people to war all the time, all the time. And what's happening is their mental health is being damaged. They're creating generational trauma because it's not being healed. And it's just passing the buck from system to system, from, you know, generation to generation. And we're never going to get a hold of it because we're constantly diverting attention away to look at all of these different conflicts. Look at how sad this is, which, yes, it's heartbreaking. It is. Those things should not be happening in the world, but we have to take care of our own. We have to do better instead of, you know, passing money off and ignoring the issues right here at home, such as, you know, homelessness, mental health, poverty, you know, hunger, all of those things that we brush under the rug every day. There are absolutely food deserts in the United States, and we ignore them, and we, you know, we cover them up because it's shameful, and we need to start taking care of our own.
Exactly. Exactly. What would you say right now to these politicians that are thinking about shutting down the government in November and being without a Speaker of the House right now? What are your thoughts on all of this chaos that has been created by our current Congress?
Oh, you know, you are one of my favorite people because this is something that I've been dying to speak out about. I am a federal public servant right now. I am actually quitting so I can run with Andy. And I've also had some circumstances in my own life that have basically given me no choice but to quit. So I've had to take a great big leap of faith and let faith be bigger than my fear to be able to run with Andy, which I'm so thankful for. But, it, you know, it doesn't make it any less terrifying, but it's something that has to happen. And what okay. I would say is I have survived many, you know, potential government shutdowns as an employee, and it is nerve-wracking every single time because it's how am I going to feed my kids? How am I going to make ends meet if, you know, if everything dries up? Like, most recently, I was actually a government employee during the furloughs, which was, I want to say, 2014, 2015 timeframe, or possibly a little bit earlier than that. My memory is failing a little bit, but it was along that timeframe. So on a small scale, it's exhausting as a government employee to constantly wonder, is my leadership going to do the right thing? Is my leadership actually considering the benefit and health of America instead of this being a political grandstand, which most of the time it is a political grandstand. There is nothing else that they are doing other than, you know, hurting people for their benefit, because people who aren't paying attention will typically think, oh, you know, good for them. They're sticking it to the man. You know, they're calling out that things aren't right. And that's not what it is. It's laziness. It's laziness, and they're kicking the can down the road instead of making decisions like we are hiring them to do. When we vote for them, we are hiring them, you know, as citizens to say, okay, we will pay you this amount per year, but you need to go make decisions on behalf of your constituency. And that's not what they're doing. What they're doing is they're using it as a way to get famous, and that's disgusting. They don't care about people. They are in it for themselves. And that is a big issue that needs to stop right away, because they're not thinking of the grand scheme of things, of this is not about them. This is not about their career. This is about how are they managing resources for our country. And that, you could get me fired up on that for a while, but we really need to stop thinking about how are these politicians handling a short-term crisis and get them out of there if they can't handle doing the right thing.
You know, my fear is that this time around, we're dealing now where we're listening to some extreme conservatives, and my fear is that these men that are in Congress that are talking about the shutdown, my fear is that they are serious about it, and I feel as though they're doing it to gain full control over the country. Because if we have a handful of conservatives that are running the country as far as preventing progress and preventing resolutions to the problems, what's going to happen after they do pick a Speaker of the House and after they do shut down the government? I understand right now that we don't even have a director in the military. We don't even have a director in the military, and all the funds in the United States are going over to these other countries. This country right now is very vulnerable for domestic and external terrorist attacks. What are your thoughts on this? Because I feel as though the people of this country, as they're always talking about, they're focusing on the people, the American people. As you and Andy have mentioned in the past, in present right now, is that you're running on the We the People Party, which means that you're including everybody in whatever decisions you make. But what are your thoughts right now as far as this country and its vulnerability to outside influences and also internal?
Yeah. That's a big question. That is an amazing question. I would absolutely agree. We are open to influence. We are so open to influence because we have these people who are trying to control the narrative by making these ultra-conservative decisions, but they're not really looking at the scheme of things. Like, when you look at the average American, nobody lives in the land of either you're in one side or the other. Everybody lives in this mix and this myriad of, you know, my political beliefs are all over the place, and I just want somebody who's going to do the right thing. And you have these conservatives, these ultra, ultra conservatives, who are absolutely lying to the American public, and they are dictating a course of action that is unsustainable. You know, there is not just this open willingness to prevent, you know, progress, you know, for people who are marginalized, but to also prevent things as simple as education to children. to making educators or to making more educated voters. Because if they have people that they can trick into thinking, hey, I'm doing the right thing, people are going to keep voting for them. So we need to expose these people for what they're doing, and we need to call them out, or it's never going to get better. That's a big thing with me of I'm really tired of people saying, you know, they believe in liberty and they believe in civil rights, but their actions do not dictate that at all. Their actions are actually saying, I'm trying to put you in bondage. I'm trying to hold you so I can, you know, I can benefit from your pain. And that's what I see happening right now in Congress. And that's terrifying. It's actually what I see happening in my own home state. There's a very big attack on free speech right now over multiple, you know, criminal justice reform advocates. So there's so much work to be done, and we really have to step up as a nation and say, no, you know, representative, no, congressman, this is not what I put you in this seat to do. And we all have to start paying attention, or they're going to keep getting away with it.
I want to say one thing, and this has been a problem I've had for a long time with the language spoken by our government. They tend mm-hmm. to speak over the average American citizens. They tend to speak over the poverty-stricken. So when they're speaking, they speak, it's as though they're speaking to just the elite. One of the reasons why I really love the fact that you and Andy are running is because you're speaking a language that everyone can understand. One of the things is you mentioned a few minutes ago that a lot of people, they don't really understand. They're voting for things that they don't really understand, or voting for people that they really don't know enough about. And it's only because a lot of these people are not illiterate, they're not stupid, but they are ignorant of the fact. They're not
right.
They're not able to comprehend the full meaning of what these legislative members and Congress are speaking, are talking about. Even when the president talks, what they understand is that they are going with whoever looks good to them or whoever sounds good to them, but they don't understand what these people are actually saying. So someone will tell them to vote for this person or that person, and they'll put it in their heads they're going to be voting and they like these people, but they don't really understand what these people are saying. And I think it's very important to have in the government, as a president and as a vice president, someone that speaks all languages to all people, not just the influential, you know, speak a language that everybody can understand. Speak a language that a 17 or 18 year old that hasn't completed college, high school, that they can understand. Because if we are for the people, then we want the people to truly understand us and what we're saying, and truly understand what our issues, the issues that we want to work on. And you mentioned the school to prison pipeline. There are advocates out there that I network with that are working on the school to prison pipeline as well, trying to prevent these mm-hmm. youth from going directly into prison. We don't have role models in the communities anymore. So we need people that are going to be running, as you and Andy are, to be able to speak the language that all American citizens will understand, not just those in power, not just those who are wealthy, but those who are really struggling in life in this country.
Yes, yes. And I just read a great book, actually, by Heather McGee. It's called The Sum of Us: What Racism Costs Everyone and How We Can Prosper Together. So there's a lot of parts in this system that it's not just about racism. It's, you know, because I am a white woman and I recognize that I have privilege, you know, because of the color of my skin. I will fully admit that. I recognize also because, you know, people might say, oh, she's really pretty. I might be, you know, considered a little bit differently than someone else. So I try not to overlook those things, and I try to leverage that privilege to a good place. So when I say this, I'm trying not to be trite, but I want to say, like, I completely understand that, you know, there are voiceless people out there, and there are people who are being disenfranchised and are being cut off from the system and from being able to have a vote in the system. And we really need, and I think that's something that Andy and I, you know, we're lockstep on, is we need to speak that language, like you said, Leona, of everyone needs to be able to understand this because our country is at stake. And it's not just a matter of, you know, who's going to be in the White House this year. It's a matter of how are we taking care of people? How are we meeting them where they're at? How are we making sure that we're ending all of these injustices that we're hiding from, you know, the public in general from happening? One of my favorite books is actually the Hunger Games series by Suzanne Collins. And it talks about how, you know, in one part of the books, you know, I mean, obviously I hate to ruin it for anyone who hasn't read it, but it talks about how the rich actually, you know, use a concept called bread and circuses, of they are giving people just enough to, you know, to keep the poor entertained and to use them to profit and to push an agenda. And that absolutely is happening in America today. It's once you've seen it and once you've been behind the curtain, you can't unsee it. I worked in a six-figure job. I would have been the last person that you would have expected to be the spouse of an incarceration-impacted person, but I'm here. And I'm glad I'm here because I can point out all of the issues in the system, hands down. I can quickly spot them because my background is actually in process improvement. I'm also a very big data nerd, so I can look at the data and tell you the way that we are measuring things in the system today, not just in the criminal justice system, but as a country in general, we're doing it wrong. And the reason we're doing it wrong is so these people in power can keep profiting and can keep hurting the little people, or the quote-unquote little people. Like, the little people are my people, but they're doing it on purpose so they can keep benefiting, so they stay in power, and so most people will feed into, you know, that concept that I talked about a little bit ago, the bread and circuses, where I'm giving these people just enough to feel like, you know, they're entertained, they're turned off, they're asleep, they're not paying attention to what's really happening. And that is the true and scariest nature of what's happening in America today.
Thank you. Another thing I see happening, too, is we have a lot of people, former entertainers, who are in politics these days. I know that there was a time when Clint Eastwood was a politician, and Ronald Reagan was a politician, Donald Trump, an entertainer, and I'm sorry, Ronald Reagan, an entertainer, and Donald Trump, and it just goes on and on, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And what we're getting, and even in Ukraine, their president, Vladimir Zelensky, a former entertainer. And when I hear of these people in politics, I often wonder, how do people actually believe what they're saying because they're so good at acting? And so one of the things is I don't think that anybody in any kind of entertainment business in their past, present, or even future should be considered to be running a country unless they have someone in power working with them that has never been in entertainment. And right now, sometimes I wonder if people are supporters of certain politicians or certain people in government because they enjoy the entertainment they're getting out of their actions. And the January 6th insurrection is another thing. They talk about terrorists. If it was somebody from another country that had done what was done at our capital in the United States, if the same thing was done and it was people from another country that did it, I don't think that there would be so much lenience in the sentencing. And recently, the judge even put a gag on order out with Trump because he was using all this vulgar language and talking, turning people against the judge and everything, and they put a gag. But what do? They charged him $5,000. They fined him $5,000. I mean, a person that makes a normal living can pay five to him. That's not even a penny. So these are some of the issues that I'd like to have you speak on, is the inequality in this country of how people, their social status and how they are affected when it comes to certain things like incarceration, when it comes to certain things that most people don't have the opportunity to get away with it. But if they're in politics, they seem to continue to do what they're doing, which is negative, and they continue to get away with it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Like, so, you know, what I say to Andy, you know, very often is it feels like a lot of my life has been dress rehearsal for this moment. And I can say that because I have had a very strange past couple of weeks, Leona. I have never been in trouble for anything in my life. I've never even had study hall as a kid. I was somebody who, you know, always wanted to do the right thing and always be, you know, an upstanding citizen and, you know, follow the rules as best as I could and make sure that other people were doing the same. And I very recently was actually arrested on false charges because I was calling out government corruption. And that happened on October 5th. I will never forget it. I was protesting. I was, you know, very nice to the police because there are good officers out there. And I'm so thankful that I had good officers who showed up to my door. But they came to my door and they were from a completely different district with a warrant from an address that I hadn't lived at in almost a decade. And the reason they did that was so that, or the prosecuting attorney for this other county that I'd been speaking out against, they did that so this police force would have no idea of what was going on and that they would not turn down the direction of, hey, you need to go arrest this woman. And the big piece to that was they, you know, they were kind to me. They were absolutely wonderful. And they agreed with me actually on dash cam footage and on body cam footage of, I'm so sorry, this shouldn't be happening to you, but this is our job. I actually ended up having to spend a night away from my children as a single mother, you know, of a wrongfully convicted spouse who this same county wrongfully convicted my husband, all because I spoke out about the harms that they were committing against Spind and against a community at large and had been doing for a very, very long time. So when I think about how I was treated in prison, or not in prison, but jail, sorry, my apologies, I spent a night in jail. I spent about 18 hours there. And I was placed in a spot where male inmates could actually see me using the bathroom. They did not give me a screen. They did not give me any privacy. They had also actually told me when I was booked into jail that the magistrate was ready to see me. I would be in and out, and I would be back home to my children. They put me in a drunk tank. And what happened was I was listening because that's what I do. I'm an excellent observer. You know, I'm an investigative journalist at heart. I actually do a lot of investigative journalism, and I work with people inside of prisons all the time. And I'm listening, you know, down the hall, and I hear them say the prosecutor wants to keep her. They want to keep her overnight. And I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to keep me overnight. Thankfully, my children were with my brother and my sister-in-law, and I knew they were in good hands. But it was still incredibly like, this shouldn't be happening to me, because due process was not followed. If I were in fact a threat to these people, in the fact that they had to get true stalking charges, they circumvented the system. They used their power to do it, because they should have gotten a restraining order, which there's no way that they would have gotten a restraining order because what I was doing was exercising First Amendment rights in speaking out against what they were doing.
That happened recently, about a year ago, with one of our legislative members right here in Massachusetts, the Congresswoman, Ayanna Presley. She was out there, I won't say it was a peaceful protest or whatever. But again, I believe it was her. She had to spend some time in, whether it was hours or a day or what. It wasn't that long. But, you know, when you're trying to do the right thing, this is what they do. And to quiet you down, they don't want people to look at someone that's going to be doing the right thing. And that's the sad thing about it. They want people like themselves that have a lot of money and power to be able to control everyone. But they're not looking at controlling. They're not looking at helping everyone. They're looking at controlling everyone so that their peers, their conservative peers, can get away with more.
Hands down, you nailed it, Leona. Like, that's exactly what's happening, is they want to be able to get away with all of these things that they're doing. And it's like, no, the American people are smart enough, are brave enough to stand up to you. And, even though they weaponized, honestly, the Michigan Attorney General against me, I have been brave enough to, along with Andy's help, we filed a federal suit to say, this is wrong. You know, you can't do this to advocates. And so there's an uprising happening of giving people their voice back. And that's the beauty of Andy's campaign, to bring that all home. And my campaign now, because I'm along for the ride, we are about you. We are about giving you a voice and seeing how can we help you. And that is something that politicians never ask. Politicians don't care about we the people. And that's where, you know, Andy's campaign and my campaign, we're digging our heels in and saying, not our people. Let our people go.
Yeah, they do. They do want to know what we want when they're looking for votes. But after that, you don't hear from them. You don't hear from them ever again, you know. And this is a problem with so many people. But I think, again, and you mentioned earlier, too, about the privilege, white privilege, which is the case with a lot of people in the country. But we're also looking at now, because this country is, it's come a long way as far as mixed marriages and multiracial marriages and mixed relationships. But when the black, brown, red, and beige, and whites in this country, the oppression that has been for so many years, and the same thing's happening in Israel and Ukraine with the Arabs and the Jews. When you look at all of this, when you look at it, it's still racism, because the Arabs and Jews hate one another. They have from the very beginning, when one stole a blessing from the other. But when you think about all these things, it falls in the same category as racism. And what's happening right now is so many innocent people, children and women especially, they're being slaughtered because these two can't come together and negotiate. And the reason being is because our own government, our own president, is going over there and getting interfering with something that may have been able to be worked out. When this thing happened in Ukraine, NATO does not consist of just the United States, but yet it was once the United States that started sending all this money over, the people from NATO stopped. But what I'm seeing right now is where all of this racial issue comes from is years and years of oppression and conflict. And even with the Native Indians, the slaughtered Indians, the Native Americans that were slaughtered. Mm-hmm. When we talk about all of these things, all of these wars and everything going on in this country and abroad, it's all because of all this oppression that people can't seem to let go of because it continues. We have the social status, which is sad because we have the elite then it's becoming more and more the elite and the poor, because the average citizen is getting very low as time goes on, because the wealthy are getting wealthier. And this is why the American people have to get involved in situations like this. They have to call in. They have to listen in. They have to learn. They have to be educated. Because if they don't, they're going to be sitting back, and one day they're going to wake up, and they're not going to have any control over their lives at all. The voting, as you mentioned, they're trying to take away the votes, and they've already done it in the prisons. But I will say, Brian Winters was a politician in Vermont, and he is now the founder of American Union. And that might be someone you and Andy might want to connect with. Brian Winters has been on the show a few times. And his thing is, he's for the cause with mass incarceration, immigration, a lot of these things. If the politicians, whatever side, is for the cause, then those are the ones he will support. And these are the things. Society First in Florida with Denise Caffo and another and her associate. These people are also working on a lot of these issues involving mass incarceration and reducing. So a lot of these things, connecting with these people, is one way to try to improve the already dysfunctional mess that our country is in right now.
Absolutely. And I would love to talk to Brian. If, like, you have his information, I will absolutely follow up with him, because this is a very big problem that it's quite timely that you bring it up. We just seem to be on that same universal wavelength right now of, I have noticed, and it bothers me deeply, that as a country, we are purposefully excluding people. We are purposefully cutting people out from the narrative. We're making sure, you know, a very big one is we don't want felons to serve on juries. Who else, you know, is perfect for a jury of someone's peers? I would say there's no one else. Somebody who has actually been through the system, that is a perfect person to have as a jury of peers. So, you know, that's a big piece that we need to work on. We also need to work on, you know, we can't keep incarcerating people and, you know, basically devolving entire neighborhoods, because that's kind of what we're doing. I'm not going to say kind of. It is what we're doing, is we are holding down neighborhoods with our thumb and preventing people from prospering. We are preventing fathers from being in households. We are making sure that generational, you know, poverty and trauma continue so that a higher class can prevail. And it's almost become modern-day eugenics, which is downright terrifying, that we are doing it on such a covert and quiet level that people aren't realizing it.
Exactly. Exactly. It's something that really needs to be addressed. There are so many things, but again, the people have to become more involved. They can't sit back and expect others to do all this and expect the right people to get into office. And what's happening as a result? And I used to hear about one world government or something.
The New World Order
New World Order. And I often wonder, is that where we're heading, because people are not getting involved? Is that where we're heading, where there's going to be a New World Order, which is going to take away, it's almost like communism. People are going to be, their rights are going to be taken away completely. Because as you mentioned, your amendment, what was it, the amendment you said was violated. These type of amendments are being slowly taken away from the people that have the right to speak, or mm-hmm. have the right to vote, have the right to even the abortions. I mean, women are losing all their rights. Everything is being slowly taken away, and people don't realize it. But by it being taken away slowly, all the rights of the individuals in this country, they're going to wake up someday, and there's not going to be any rights they're going to have to get permission to leave their homes. I just think that
absolutely
we're heading in a bad area, and people need to get involved. They need to hear what's being said to them. And that's why I enjoy what you're saying, because you seem to be touching on all these bases, on all these areas as well.
Thank you, Leona. You are so sweet. I appreciate you so much. And I absolutely agree. Like, I am definitely, like, I cried the day that Roe versus Wade was overturned, because I knew this was a very big step in a wrong direction for America. It was a very big step of, you know, if there's a woman who has a medical issue, she is basically stuck. There is no ability for her to fight back and say, I am dying and I have to have this medical care. The doctor's hands are tied at that point. You know, that's terrifying. That to me is inexcusable. That should not even be, you know, the America that we live in. And, you know, that's first and foremost. But the other part of that, you know, it goes to, if we don't fight back, if we don't step up, if regular people don't start saying, hey, what the hell are you doing with my country? It's never going to get better, because that's how politicians are, you know, like these typical career politicians in Washington are prevailing and are withholding, you know, the rights of people every day. They don't care about you and me. They don't care about our children. What they care about is staying in power. They don't care what rights are afforded to us. And it's up to us, not them, to fight and to say, no, enough is enough. And what we need to do is take it back to the way our founding fathers wanted it to be, where it was regular people, not career politicians, that were making a difference in the world. And that is paramount to, you know, what Andy and I are doing, as well as so many other movements in our country right now, is it's up to us to lock arms, to be strong, to band together, and, you know, be there for one another and fight back.
Exactly. People from other countries, as I mentioned, they are willing to come to the United States. They're willing to go to the universities and speak. They're willing to speak before legislative members, but they are just waiting for an invitation to come. And I think if they were to come to this country and meet with you and Andy and meet with some of these legislative members, I think that they could offer a lot of valuable information on how to do certain things in this country, how to go about it. Because their countries, look at Norway, role model for all prisons, but their countries, you listen to these people talk, and they just have such a refreshing, quiet, laid-back attitude. In this country, everything is so aggressive, assertive, everything is so chaotic and rush. When I traveled all these countries, I met people in a lot of countries that were just so hospitable. They were so laid back. They were Christians, even though they were very poor in many of these countries, they still had an attitude that we don't see in this country. And I think sometimes this country has been blessed and don't appreciate it. They take it for granted. And there's going to be a day when this country is going to become the third world country that all these other countries and are no longer. But
I absolutely agree. I think that is very much a real issue. And I'm glad that you brought up Norway, because Norway, Sweden, they have some of the most humane and amazing prison systems, where they teach people how to be productive members of society. They don't teach them how to be prisoners. And that's what we do in the United States of America. We lock people up and we ask questions later. We humiliate them. We hurt their families. We make sure that it's almost impossible for them to recover. And when they do recover, it's an amazing, you know, success story. But it shouldn't be an amazing success story. It should be, we are setting people up with the resources that they need to succeed, and we are teaching them, like, yes, you made a mistake, but here's how you can do better. Here's how you can be a functioning member of society. And that is something that we don't do well. We are very much, we're mean. There's no other way to put it.
The word
in the way that we distribute justice.
And all the advocacy work I've been doing, I learned about, and you've probably seen it, about the young man that was kept in a cell in Georgia. He could not have been, they could not have paid any attention to him. He ended up getting, he was eaten alive by bed bugs. And then you have the case of the mentally ill man, Daryl Rainey in Florida, who had been locked in a shower. He was mentally ill, was locked in a shower by the guards, and the water was turned up to 180 degrees. And he was in that shower screaming, and everybody on the block could hear him screaming for his life. And he was scalded so much that all of his skin, his muscles, everything separated from his bones. We live in a society where people hear these things, and our government hears these things, and they do nothing whatsoever to do these investigations into these prisons where all of these torturous activities are taking place. You try to get help from the government. You try to get help from legislative members. They may make a few calls here and there. But if they don't get anywhere, then all of a sudden you hear nothing at all from them. So it's sad when you hear about all these situations that are occurring in the prisons, and they wonder why there's so many suicides in the prisons. And these are people.
Yes.
Dave Van Beem and Marika Schoen-Gills, they were talking about all this today. And Franz Dahl is away on vacation with his wife right now, but he was a 27-year warden in Amsterdam. And he took it upon himself to meet with prisoners from time to time, to treat them like human beings, as he said they do not do in the United States. Franz has been in the U.S. prisons. Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands, has been in U.S. prisons. Dave Van Beem and Marik, I don't know if they've been in the state prisons, but they know about the United States. And this is sad because Franz Dahl talks a lot about how the thing that's missing in our prison system in this country is the humanity. People are not treated like beings. They're treated like animals. And our society sits back and accepts it. Our legislative members sit back and they accept it. And this is very sad because how do you have safe communities when you have the relatives, family members of those who are going through all this torture that are on the outside? And their children or nieces or nephews or cousins or whatever are going to be going through society hating these people for not doing anything to help. And that's not making our community safer.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it's not. And even, so one of the clients that I work with in my work, so just a quick synopsis of I oversee what's called a citizen detective team. And it creates a pathway for people who are of all different walks of life. Like maybe you're a social media influencer, or maybe you're like my sister-in-law who you're just really good at, open source investigation and finding people on Facebook, or, somebody who's not necessarily an investigator or a police officer by trade, but you can use your natural innate, logical skills to be able to put forward to investigating things. We actually investigate wrongful incarcerations and, prison misconduct for free. And one of the people that I am so honored to not only call a friend, but somebody who we are actively investigating, their case is Joe Exotic, believe it or not, the Tiger King. And he is experiencing significant prison misconduct. They are denying medical rights. They are, constantly monitoring his phones because they're terrified of what he's going to say about how they are treating him. They are limiting his free speech, and he has every right to sue their pants right off according to all of the, prison litigation reform act documentation that's out there. but they make it impossible for him. So if they're doing it to somebody like Joe Exotic, you better believe they're doing it to your, you know, your best friend's neighbor or whoever that you might know in your life who is facing incarceration.
It's a
fact.
They
are holding everyone back.
It's the fact. And the sad thing about it is a lot of these people can't afford lawyers, or they can't get lawyers. So they're subjected to daily torment and torture by the overseers. And that's unfortunate, because if people have money, they can get lawyers. Or if lawyers want to take cases, they're going to take the cases that are going to make them look good or that are going to help benefit their firms. And this is what happens around the country, too. There are too many people who are indigent and cannot afford lawyers. And you talk about...
Yeah, and that's another... Yeah.
You talk about another amazing thing.
Go ahead.
You talk about wrongful convictions. I just want to bring up Jeffrey Deskovic. He went to prison when he was 16 or 17 years old on a wrongful conviction. The police actually went to his house and arrested him or brought him to the police station when his mother and grandmother were not home. And Jeffrey is now a lawyer in New York representing wrongfully convicted. He was 16 or 17. He was exonerated, but at the same time, he spent, I believe, 15 or 16 years in prison on a crime, on an offense he did not commit. So when you mention wrongfully convicted, you know, in your situation as well, it's people that have been there, done it, and experienced firsthand of the torment and torture that goes on behind those prison walls. And our government does not acknowledge it, because they have been fortunate enough, because of their position, not to be in prison, and they're still trying to stay out.
Please said, Leona, of these people have not convicted, or these people have not been convicted, these people have not had somebody that they love be wrongfully convicted, and that is how they are able to afford the arrogance that they exude. And that is a tremendous issue in and of itself, of it almost becomes, and this is, you know, something that I've equated to Andy and conversations with him, is it almost becomes like a very strange multi-level marketing type scheme of you have these prosecutors and these police officers who are just looking to, who can I convict next? Who in my circle of influence can I get so that I can convict and get my numbers for the week, for the month, for the year? And that is the big problem. When you look at the heart of it, is we are measuring very, very incorrectly in our system. We are measuring all of the wrong things. When we should be measuring recidivism, we're measuring how many people did I arrest this week? How many tickets did I issue? Those are not measures of success. And I speak from this angle as somebody who actually, you know, I cut my teeth on data analytics, and I have certifications in data science and data analytics. So I can say confidently and outright, these people do not understand how to measure data, and they're trying to dictate to the rest of the world how to understand it and how to interpret it, and they're wrong. They're flat out wrong.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned quota. I remember years ago, I used to go through this certain town, Middleborough, on my way to Boston, and I would get stopped in that same area all the time for not wearing my seatbelt. But that was when seatbelts were not required. They were just getting ready to come out with that law. And every time I'd get a ticket, I'd have to show up in court, and I'd go to court, and the police, the officers, I don't know if it was the same one, it was so long ago, but the person that wrote up the ticket never showed up. And there would be this female state trooper, and she'd say, and I went there one time, the first time, and the next time I went back again, I said, I'm back again. She said, you were here before? And I said, yes. I said, I keep getting stopped in this area, and they keep giving me a ticket because I'm not wearing my seatbelt. And she said, well, right now it's not a law, but she says you might want to get prepared because it's going to come into law soon. But then I found out she was telling me that that the person didn't show up. So every time I'd go, it would be dismissed and I'd go home. Then I found out, and it was in the paper, that there was this very area, the police were stopping people because they were trying to make up their quota. And they got in trouble back then. They got in trouble for what they were doing. But I didn't understand what it was all about. And that state trooper, the last time I went there, that's what she was saying, is that this is what they were doing. They have to make their quota, so this is what they were doing.
Exactly. You became a product of the system at that point. Of they were like, look at this, you know, perfectly nice woman that we can keep exploiting. And I feel like that's a big part of it, too, of, you know, would they have done that to a man? Probably not. You know, there is this, you know, this unfortunate, you know, societal, I guess, fragility that women experience of we can be tough as nails, still going to try to find a way to come after us. And it feels like to me from your description, I could be wrong, but it feels like that's almost what was going on is they saw, oh, look, there's a vulnerable woman. She's by herself in the car. I'm going to take advantage of it because is she going to be brave enough to fight the ticket? And that's why they didn't show up, is they were banking on you not fighting the ticket.
Hmm. Well, I was a social worker at the time, so, but I was I was also going to bring
one of my very good friends, Heidi, is a social worker, and, you know, she is very much cut of the same cloth that I am, and she actually lives in Massachusetts. We'll have to talk offline about that, but
Heidi,
one of my very good friends, and I love her.
Yeah, we need to talk after because I know Heidi. I know a Heidi, but the one I know is was in California. But what I was going to say too is, and you mentioned earlier about the racial issue. I wanted to say too, when it comes to law enforcement, they have a habit of targeting people of color. But what's happening now is they have actually extended over to a lot of the Caucasians, a lot of women and even men are afraid now to stop when they get stopped by the police. I know there was a few incidences a couple of years ago where the police were following the individuals, Caucasian, and the individuals were afraid to stop. So finally, when they did stop, they stopped in a lit up area and they themselves said they were stopping in a lit up area because they were afraid of getting shot or beaten by the police. So this is why it's become such a fearful situation for people now, not only the people of color, but also a lot of whites that are afraid of police officers. And as you mentioned earlier, there are some good police officers. There's good correctional officers. There's good prison officials, but it's the corrupt ones that are making it bad for the good ones. And the good ones, if they don't speak up, then it's been said so many times by others that they're just as wrong. If they can't expose their peers who are doing wrong activities or corrupt activities or violent activities, then they're just as wrong. And when we think about the police officers out in the streets these days that are getting shot and killed, we have to ask ourselves, why would anybody that's not doing wrong be afraid or not want to speak out about their peers? Because their peers don't care enough about them if they're going to continue their corrupt ways and put their own good peers at risk of being shot or killed themselves. It's like poor association. We can hang around with somebody that's going to want to do good, just like we're doing, to make themselves look good and to make us look good. Or we can associate with somebody that's going to try to do wrong and expect us to hang in there with them. That's what we have
Absolutely.
To look into. But I don't want to get off track with what you were saying either. And I want to hear more from you, Rita. And the audience would probably like to hear more too, if I would just shut up for a minute.
No, this is great conversation. There's so much to be had here. There's just so much to take into account of just how unjust the system is right now and how everybody's rights are being trampled on. Nobody is safe at this point, honestly. Like, there was a point last summer when I had, like, again, I had finished my criminal justice master's program, you know, learning all of these amazing things like restorative justice and alternative court programs, and learning how the system could and should be. I am so thankful for, again, shout out to Purdue. Thank you for arming me with the knowledge that I needed to succeed, because it helped me realize what's happening in my community is wrong. And this isn't the way that the system should be. But I had gotten in touch, like, I had, you know, after my husband had been arrested, I started doing a ton of research, and I'm like, something isn't right here. I know it. I feel it. I feel it at the core of my being. And I started reaching out to whoever I could to get insight and to, you know, start, you know, getting to the bottom of why is our system so screwed up? Because I knew that there were problems, but until you're in the eye of the storm, you don't realize how bad it is. It is horrible. It is a place that I would not wish my worst enemy to be. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to an amazing individual who is, he is a professor and an attorney. And I won't use his name because I didn't ask for permission before telling this story, because this is something that you actually jogged in my head. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to tell this story now. But I called him just scrambling for answers of, I don't understand how anything that just happened to us. Because what happened was my husband had scheduled a turn-in to try to cooperate, to try to get to the bottom of everything that was going on and to, you know, rectify whatever issue was going on at the lowest level instead of taking it through the system and making it into this big rigmarole that my kids and I would have to survive. And they ended up, not on purpose, I found out, on purpose, not documenting his turn-in request. So they arrested my husband in front of my children.
Oh, geez.
And, yep, and I had actually told them, like, flat out, I went right into flight or flight mode of, I'm a criminal justice professional and a student, or a former student and a professional now, and I know what you are doing is incorrect. I know what you are doing is unconstitutional. And they still kept throwing Michigan law back at me and saying, we can do whatever we want. And that, to me, was the most haunting phrase of, we can do whatever we want. And so when,
you know,
I took that phrase to
real quickly,
a professor.
If I can, real
oh,
quickly,
sure.
I don't mean to. You know, that's the one thing they don't like, is somebody that knows as much or more than them. And
right.
By you having that knowledge, it makes them even madder, and that's why they said they can do whatever they want. They there's a lot of people that get hired that don't have the education. They get hired off, you
yes.
know, it's who you know or what you know, or maybe they were in the military or something at one time, so they get hired. But when they are up against somebody that's a threat to them by knowing more, which was your situation, that's why they started treating you like that.
Absolutely. You nailed it. Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it, Leona, because what happened was I'm an excellent investigative journalist, and I found out one of them was former military and one of them was just, hey, you know what? I think I'll enroll in the academy. And so I obviously had more collective knowledge than either of them. And they were threatened by a woman knowing more than them. And when I said, I know that there are constitutional rights for inhabitants of a home, you're screwing this up, we need to do this differently, and they kept threatening me. They never left me a copy of the warrant. They, you know, they didn't even tell me where they were taking my husband. So there were a lot of things that I had to figure out on my own that were completely unprofessional and should have never happened. And that was where all of this really began and just kept getting swept under the rug in terms of me becoming an advocate of, they had no idea the beasts that they unleashed. But it was the most sobering experience to realize this is America. This is what's really happening in our system right now. And there is so much work to be done. And that's when I realized I have to get to work. And I actually started my blog. But going back to, you know, the part of the story that I feel is like the most important central part of this and the scariest part of this is I started doing as much research as I could because I wanted to make sure that whatever I was putting out on my blog was the truth. And that, like, I mean, yes, there's my experience, but then there's actually, you know, the law, and there is what should be considered for, you know, for everyone. So I reached out to this professor who wrote this amazing, you know, document on, you know, professional searches and, you know, plea bargains and all of these things that my husband, you know, was getting ready to stumble into. And he said, it is extremely odd that somebody like you, somebody who's white, who has privilege, you know, who earns six figures a year, would be experiencing this. And he said, I would not be shocked if you are the first of many that are about to experience this because they're running out of people to prosecute.
That's what's
and
happening.
It ran my blood cold of, I need to get in this game. I need to make sure that I can protect other people. And it was the scariest thing I had heard of, you know, basically Americans are free game for the government at this point.
I'll tell you, it's getting to the point where, as he said, it's going to spill over. And that's what's happening. A lot of people now are finding out that sometimes it doesn't always mean race. It can be somebody that's less fortunate in social status or mental health or disabilities or whatever. But I will say there's a lot of people out in the communities that are connected with the law enforcement, with prison officials, with the corrupt government, and they will be looking at voting for their even in the media, you never hear about any of them being stopped on a speeding violation or their children or anything. And when you get politicians and you get the media that's getting away with so much, you often wonder why. And then there's so many others that are out there that don't get, you don't hear anything about them unless it's a tragic thing where there's a car accident because the police are speeding or somebody's speeding that's in politics or in the media or whatever. And then it's usually the other person's fault.
Right.
But,
absolutely right.
I want to say too, Rita, we got about 10 minutes. So if you can, please give the audience your contact information, your website, or anything that you want to let them know, and also where people can donate if they want to contribute to your campaign.
Sure. I'm unfortunately at a standstill with my campaign contributions because of what the government has done to silence me in Berry County, Michigan. But you can visit my website, which is the My Rights Count Project. .com, and you can for now donate to, you know, my cause of, you know, wrongful convictions or to my family personally as we suffer through our legal abuse that we're currently surviving. But also you can also, while you're there, join the citizen detective team, because you could be a part of changing someone's life. And that, to me, is everything. We need people from all walks of life to, you know, to help save people from being stuck behind bars unrequired. Like, we need to fix that. So I'm also on Twitter, and I'm hoping very, very soon to be back there. And you can email me at myrightscountproject@proton.me. If you would like to speak to me, I have people reading my email and then reading them back to me as I'm currently under a unconstitutional gag order, and I recently filed a federal suit against it, thanks to Andy. We are working that and hopefully getting my hands untied soon so that I can be back in full swing.
You know, that's sad that when people try to run, this is when the average citizen tries to run for some political position, when they do things like this, it's purposely done. We all know that this is how they operate. This is how the mentality of these children who ended up being fed on a silver spoon to get the positions they're in now, that try to prevent somebody that works hard for their positions, and they start to make problems for them. And we do have a lot of politicians, especially these conservative, that have had everything given to them on a silver platter, don't know anything about the average citizen, and are planning on shutting down the government because they know they have a way to survive when everyone else in the country is going to be struggling. There's going to be more people that are homeless in the streets because of these conservative, these wealthy children that act like they don't have a care in the world.
Absolutely. These people who don't care about, you know, kids that are going to go hungry, people, families, you know, the ripple effect that they're creating by damaging communities. These are things that need to be taken into account, and these are things that politicians don't care about.
Unfortunately. And that's why we need that's why we need people like you and Andy Williams Jr. as well. I want to thank you so much, Rita, for coming on and speaking on your vice presidential campaign. And I do hope that you will start getting people will start voting or talking about your run and also Andy's, and they'll try to participate in whatever way they can. Audience, I'm going to say we really need a change in this country. And many of us in this country have this attitude that we have to impress others. We have to be at the top with all of these people who are of the elite and conservative parties. We have people right now that are running for the presidential campaign and the vice presidential campaign. They have been there. They have done it. They have experienced the injustices that have been going on in this country. They know what you need as a citizen of the United States. They're willing to advocate for you, and they're also in need of your support as well. So please, please go to these websites, connect with Andy Williams Jr., connect with Rita Williams, and please contact them to see how you can help in any way you can. We need to turn this system around. If we don't, someday we're all going to wake up and regret it, that not getting involved was the answer. So please, again, connect with Rita Williams and connect with Andy Williams Jr. on their websites or however you can, and try to get more involved. Thank you so much for listening. Rita, I want to thank you. It was an honor having you on. It was an honor meeting you. And I do wish you well in your run. And I know who I'm going to be voting for in 2024. And I know who I'm going to be promoting as well. So thank you so much. And if you have any last words to say, please do.
Leona, you are amazing. Thank you for having me. And audience, like, if there's anything that I can do for you, please reach out to me. I am, you know, I have a servant's heart. I am here to help.
Thank you so much. Thank you so, so much. And I hope you'll be coming on with Andy next Tuesday or whenever you can, because it would be good to have the team coming on together sometime if you can.
I would be honored. I count on me. I will be there.
Great. Well, thank you so much once again. Audience, we're going to be shutting down now. I want to thank all of you for listening in, all that have listened in. And again, next Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, we're going to have Andy Williams Jr. back on with us, the presidential campaign runner. And we're going to have Rita Williams also coming on, the vice presidential campaign candidate. And I'd like to have all of you listening in next Tuesday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And please feel free to call in, ask questions, give feedback, whatever the case may be. Let's show everyone that we the people can come together. We the people can talk about issues. And we can maybe not see eye to eye, but we can also agree to disagree. So please come on and let's get this thing on the road. Thank you so much for listening in. And again, Rita, thank you so much for coming on. We will now end this episode.
Thank you.